in the air as of right now.
Fire crews are still trying to keep the fire from spreading to other chemical tanks. You're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
President Trump says, without a question about legal citizenship added to the 2020 census, the count will be a waste of money. John Clemens reports.
Mr. Trump went on Twitter to state, "Can you believe that the radical left Democrats want to do our new and very important census report without the important citizenship question? Over 250,000 people have applied for temporary positions as census takers." Tim Olson of the Census Bureau tells us about the pay.
Pay rates range from $13.50 to $30 per hour, depending on where you live. Field employees are reimbursed for official mileage and receive all the equipment and training needed for their job.
I'm John Clemens.
A top Trump official is speaking out about security clearances at the White House. USA's Chris Barnes reports.
Seldom heard by reporters, senior advisor to President Trump, as well as his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, was speaking last night to Fox and brushing off claims that he should never have been granted a high-level security clearance. He says on the Ingram angle,
"Over the last 2 years that I've been here, I've been accused of all different types of things, and all of those things have turned out to be false. We've had a lot of crazy accusations, like that we colluded with Russia."
Kushner is saying he complied with all the investigations that were ever done concerning him and or President Trump. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
When friends are not enough and you are struggling with depression, anxiety, or addictions, it's time to seek out help. Mental health is one of the most important building blocks to a healthy life. Tune into Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon and listen to many topics that pertain to good mental health. With Ruth Altamura Roll, a licensed professional counselor, as your host, you will learn about many facets of good mental health. Let's remove the stigma. Go to www.altarolecounselor.net for more information about my practice. And please follow me on Counselor's Chat on Facebook. Remember, Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon. I wish you good mental health.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Murphy, host of Talented People Radio, produced by Mariah Media. Our show is fun, and we specialize on interviewing some of the most awesome people from around the world. Tune in and watch our live stream on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can watch past episodes. Talented People airs every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Join us for some fun.
Good morning. This is I Love New Jersey Radio, and I'm Jeannie Murphy, and I really do love New Jersey, and I hope you do too. My guest today is Kevin Kilcommons. He's a very prestigious award-winning, I wouldn't say award-winning, but I don't know, maybe he is, attorney, he's going to tell us, from the Hunterdon area. We're going to talk about that. First, the weather. Today is sunny with a high of 63. It's actually beautiful outside. It's like spring has sprung. Mostly clear tonight with a low about 37, partly sunny all day with a high about 59 on Thursday. Chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a low of 38 on Thursday night. Friday, rain likely, cloudy with a high of about 49, then rain with a low around 43 on Friday night. Saturday, rain likely again before 8 a.m., but then partly sunny with a high of 66. Partly cloudy with a low of 44 on Saturday night, and then partly sunny again with a high near 64 on Sunday. So we're going to go to our one quick commercial break, and then we're going to be back, and we're going to talk about real estate and business franchises and whatever Kevin has on his mind. So this is I Love New Jersey, and thanks for watching, and stay with us.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
All right, welcome back to the show. This is I Love New Jersey, and I do. My name is Jeannie Murphy, and I'm a Weikert Realtor in Flemington, New Jersey. If you're looking to buy or sell property, please get in touch with me. I've been around for a long time. I love Hunterdon County. I love the state of New Jersey, and I love my guest today, too. Kevin Kilcommons, he's an attorney here in the Hunterdon County area serving the state around, all over, right? Let's hear about Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you, Jeannie.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, so Kevin, tell us a little bit about you and your practice.
Okay. Well, I'm an attorney of over 30 years. I am born and raised in New Jersey, and I began my practice over in the eastern counties. And then when my wife and I got married, we moved out here to Hunterdon County in 1989. And by the early 90s, I started practicing here, and that's about the time that I started getting involved in real estate work. Before that, I'd been doing litigation and commercial work and some corporate work as well. So then I expanded my horizons into real estate. And that's when I realized how unique Hunterdon County was in many ways, because we're dealing with real estate issues out here that most of the counties east of us don't deal with. Many times you run into former farms that have interesting restrictions and easements on them. And so that's a challenge.
Yeah, I want to hear all about it. We are all about real estate over here, and I love New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
I love saying that. I think it's funny.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, there are areas in the county where there were farms, and the farms, of course, had certain restrictions on them. There could have been water rights. There could have been dams. There could have been snowdrift easements. There could have been old roads, you know, that
Well, talk about what do you mean by a restriction in the first place.
Well, sure. So the way the law developed, people own a certain piece of land to a certain extent. They have fee ownership. You know, originally the king owned all the land. And then the king gave out certain parcels to people and gave them certain rights over that land. And eventually, over hundreds of years, we've developed into what we have now as property law, where when you purchase your property, you have a fee ownership. But there could be all sorts of restrictions on that property.
This is fascinating. I didn't know the king owned all the property.
Absolutely.
This is amazing.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that makes sense. That's
right.
Why I went to school.
Of course. So when New Jersey broke away from Great Britain, all right, all that land transferred over to the people. It was no longer the king's land, and the king originally deeded it, or I should say gave license to a couple of lords. There was Berkeley and Stirling, or Lord Berkeley in the south, and I'm forgetting offhand who it was in the north, but they split the state in half. And then those lords were responsible for breaking down all the other parcels after that. All right, so that's where it started in New Jersey.
Wow.
So
that's so interesting.
Right.
Keep
so then
going.
You have the land, and you have people who have contiguous lands, and sometimes they run up against each other and they would have issues. So they might need restrictions on it. So for instance, if they needed a road to run through it, they needed an easement to allow that road to run through their property. We actually have properties in this county where the owners of the property actually technically own the bridge that goes over the stream. I know of one instance of that up in Lebanon Township. And so, but that bridge is actually controlled by the county. And the county is responsible for the engineering and the upkeep and all. But the land on both sides of that bridge technically belong to the owners of that plot of land. So that's how things developed here in Hunterdon County. You may have other properties where, again, there may have been a snowdrift easement.
What is a snowdrift easement?
Well, a drift easement is where a farmer needs that drift in order to protect a field. So the other person that may own that piece of property gives them the right to maintain that drift so that they could then protect their fields. That's what a drift easement is. We don't use them. I mean, I suppose they could be used these days, but it's not as important now as it was 100, 200 years ago.
Wow.
But we still have them coming up in these deeds.
Right. Yeah. So that is so interesting. Okay. So now what about other restrictions that you see commonly in real estate, or maybe that you look for when someone comes into your office for attorney review and to have you represent them during a real estate transaction?
Well, the most common one you come across is a utility easement. All right. So back in the 1930s and 40s, the utility companies came through and they started buying up plots of land so that they could run lines across them. Some of them are high-tension lines that come out of the power generation plants down along the river. Others are just, you know, typical lines that run from property to property. So you're always going to see utility easements when you get a title report from the title company. You would expect that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, though, you run into something that you don't expect. and things that you need to bring to the client's attention that they may not realize. For instance, a pipeline.
Okay. I was just thinking about
that.
So
when you're looking at a piece of property, if you're not looking closely enough, you may not realize that there are pipes under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a number of pipelines that run through Hunterdon County, and many of these pipes ran through fairly new developments. So then you get a title report, and all of a sudden you see in the title report that there are pipes under the ground. And, you know, any good realtor is going to know that beforehand and advise their clients, because some folks are very particular about having these gas pipelines in their backyards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may, in fact, I knew of one property where the gas line came within 20 feet of the house. I wouldn't want to live in that house. So mm-hmm. people need to know that before they purchase these properties.
What about when they purchase the properties and then the pipeline wants to go through their yard?
Sure, they have to go through condemnation, and that's going on right now, the whole fight over PennEast coming through the western part of the state. This company wants to expand the easements that are already there
mm-hmm.
to allow for more pipes, and folks are fighting it tooth and nail. Some of these lines want to go through preserved lands,
mm-hmm.
Lands that are already preserved by the state of New Jersey under farmland protection, whatnot. So it's a huge fight going on. It's working its way through the federal court. There's been a lot of opposition to it, and it's been really I've been fascinated watching this develop, because people have really coalesced in western Jersey. I would say anywhere west of Clinton, you're seeing people mobilizing and fighting the pipeline. People feel very strongly about it both ways. I mean, mm-hmm. there are folks that own land out there who are going to benefit monetarily if they allow the rights to these pipelines, and they're signing off, and mm-hmm. they're getting large checks for that. And other folks who are vehemently against it, and so you see some tensions out there. And I've seen it especially where the pipeline has sent out surveying crews
mm-hmm.
that just expect to walk onto the properties and start surveying these properties without getting the permission of the owners. And that's there have been I've heard anecdotally of a couple instances where people have actually faced them down. In one instance, I think the gentleman was even armed when he faced down the surveyors.
Wow.
So it's a hot topic issue,
mm-hmm.
And it's something that everybody in New Jersey should be interested in, but certainly the folks out here in Hunterdon County and Warren County.
Do you know what parts of Hunterdon County are mostly affected?
Well, I can tell you that it runs a swath down parallel to the Delaware River, comes across in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
then runs down through, I believe, Holland and Delaware townships. Those are the ones that are primarily affected.
Mm-hmm. And then if somebody has property along this way and they want to speak with you, you would offer services to help defend them, correct?
You know, honestly, I would refer them, because
okay.
I have not been involved in the ground level of this dispute. There are a number of organizations out there that have been organizing and hiring counsel, and so that's not something I would certainly hear them out and get them to the right people, but it's not something that I've been taking
on. Well, you bring
myself.
It up, it's so interesting. Okay.
It's fascinating.
It's fascinating is right.
Yeah.
So I'm Jeannie Murphy. This is I Love New Jersey. My guest is Kevin Kilcommons. He's an attorney practicing here in the state of New Jersey. We're talking a little bit about real estate and some other, what do you call them, services?
Sure, legal services.
Legal services, there different types of them. We're going to go to our break real quick, and I'll be right back, so stay with us.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterton Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterton-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right. Well, good morning. I'm Jeannie Murphy. This is I Love New Jersey Radio here streaming live from the Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce on Facebook. I'm a real estate agent with Weikert in Flemington. So if you're looking for a home either to buy or to sell, please get in touch with me. And my guest is my colleague here. He's an attorney in the state of New Jersey, has a specialty in more than just real estate. But today we're talking about real estate with Kevin Kilcommons. So Kevin, you were enlightening us on really things to know about, like, with the pipeline and with real estate in New Jersey and some deed restrictions. And I love that whole thing about the king. That was really interesting. If you didn't see it, back up to the beginning and watch. I never thought about it. Yeah. It really makes sense, especially the words like deed restriction. Now all of a sudden it's making sense. Mm-hmm. The king had to do with that.
Right. Well, it started
I
with
love
the king.
It. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. Yeah. You know, just don't think about things like that. All right. So now you're in the office every day. Buyers and sellers are coming through,
right,
giving you their attorney review contract. Tell us about a day in your office.
Sure. So especially this time of year when the market starts to heat up, we'll get a phone call from a client who's selling or buying a home. Although these days most of my clients have been selling, there's been quite a move out of the state. So I would say 95% of our real estate deals are sales, where we represent the seller. So they'll call and say, hey, we just signed off on a contract. Everybody's signature's on there. We're starting attorney review, which means in the state of New Jersey, and this is another backstory, many years ago the realtors started writing their own contracts for clients. And they would have everybody sign it, and they'd go forward, and then all of a sudden there would be problems with the contracts, and people would start saying, well, wait a minute, I didn't know that, and I didn't have an attorney review it. And the state bar decided to take you realtors to court and sue you for the practice of law. And so it went through the courts back in the 1980s, and it ended up in the Supreme Court, and the realtors were arguing, but, you know, we need a standard contract that everybody can sign to get this thing going. And the bar was saying, but wait a minute, you're having them sign a contract for a very valuable piece of property, and there are tremendous issues involved here that people need to understand before they sign their name to it. So when they were before the Supreme Court, they came to a settlement, and the settlement was this. Realtors will be allowed to draft a form contract and have the parties sign it, but the parties will have 3 days at that point to have an attorney review the contract and ask for any revisions. And one of the things they have to do when they ask for revisions is literally cancel the contract. They say, I disapprove the contract. You have to use that language. And we ask that the following terms be incorporated into the agreement.
Okay.
These are the revisions. This is what we do during attorney review, and that's why we have to do it. People are like, especially when they come in from out of state, they scratch their heads and like, what is going on here? Why? First of all, we don't even have attorneys involved in other states. Usually it's just the title company, which I think is insane. But here, no. That's been the practice. We have attorneys involved. And during the attorney review, both the buyers and sellers will typically have some changes to make to that contract. That's normal.
Like what?
Well, for instance, for whatever reason, in the most recent version of the form contract by the New Jersey Realtors Association, they have language in there that says that the seller is responsible for paying one half of the buyer's title agent's fee, which drives us insane.
That's funny.
And it's in there because apparently it was a South Jersey practice, which is something we never did in North Jersey. So as a seller's attorney, I always take that language out.
Sure.
Because it's always the buyer's responsibility to pay their title company charges. It's never the seller's responsibility. So that's the kind of thing that we weed out of there. There's also other language in there that, you know, no offense, but it helps the realtors. It doesn't help either of the parties. So the realtors like to have language in there that says that if either of you breach this, you still have to pay us a commission, that sort of thing. We don't like to have that in there as well. So after the 3 days, and literally what happens is one of the attorneys sends a letter in 3 days, and then it expands. It usually takes more like 4 or 5, maybe even 6 days.
Okay.
And then at the end of that period, both parties agree, okay, these are the final terms. We have a contract. And then you go from there. So the next phase, of course, is the inspections.
Mm-hmm.
People generally have 14 days to do their inspections. And then they get their inspection reports over to the sellers with a list of demands of things that they want fixed or addressed or whatever, things they didn't know about. And the thing for sellers to understand and the buyers is that what's fair game here are items that you didn't see when you made your offer to buy that home.
So
if there are latent problems that you as a layperson could not have seen, things mm-hmm. behind the wall, mm-hmm. that's fair game.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're writing to them and say, hey, you know what, you got a cracked window, we want you to replace that window. Well, or you have an old roof, it's not leaking yet, but it's old, maybe you need to replace that. Those are not fair items to be negotiating at that point because you saw it, mm-hmm. and if you had been diligent,
I like
you
the way
would
you said that.
It.
That's very good.
Right. So latent issues that you need inspectors, you know, experts to find, for instance, electrical problems, plumbing problems, problems with the systems, okay, foundation problems occasionally we have. Those are all fair game for that next series of negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes that takes longer than the initial attorney review phase.
Mm-hmm.
And people get dug in about it. You know, a lot of sellers have a certain price in mind and they don't want to move from that price. Well, now all of a sudden the buyer's saying, you need to fix this and that. And now they're thinking, that's thousands of dollars more.
Mm-hmm.
And God forbid it's a septic system that's
yeah.
failed, which
mm-hmm.
unfortunately happens more often than you'd like to think.
Oh, yeah, because the age of,
right.
of the county.
Exactly.
Under
and
the king.
It, well, not just the age. I mean, I've seen systems 50 years old that still work.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it's the geological makeup of the geology in that area that affects those septic systems.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever a client tells me about their home and how old the septic system that they're selling, I ask them, are you aware of any neighbors that have had to replace their septic systems?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's an indicator right there
mm-hmm.
That you
very,
might have
very
problems.
Smart. Yeah, very
so,
wise.
So keep an eye out with your neighbors and whether or not they're having issues with their septic systems, because that's a telltale sign that you may have the same issues as well.
Very,
it's like
very
it's like a family medical history.
Oh, yeah, that's so cool. What about, like, seriously, when it comes to attorney review, I always ask these questions on behalf of all of my people out there watching because I like to share with them things that they can know about if they're getting ready to sell or buy their house.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I'm Jeannie Murphy. This is I Love New Jersey. My guest is attorney Kevin Kilcommons from the Hunterdon area. Now, okay, when it comes to attorney review, what do you think is the rule when especially if you represent sellers mostly, when someone goes into attorney review with a contract and now the buyer's taking it to their attorney's office and putting out money for the attorney review, while they're in attorney review, they can continue to show, correct? So if some other buyer comes along, how do you feel about that? What do you advise your sellers to do when it comes to that?
Well, they have to understand that when we send out that letter, we're suspending the contract. You're
mm-hmm.
not under contract at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that another party could sweep in and offer a better price. And now you have a price war.
Right.
You have a bidding war going.
That's, I'm talking to my people who are afraid to make an offer because they feel like if they make an offer and it goes into attorney review, they still have a chance to have it like in a bid war. So they just are afraid to do anything.
Well, you have to start somewhere.
Right. Yes.
So, I mean, and I have to tell you, in this area, it doesn't happen as often. The further east you go, the more likely you're going to have bidding wars over properties.
Mm-hmm.
Out here, that's not so much the case. I mean, I've had it happen to me once in the past week or two. But in most cases, it's just one buyer and one seller,
mm-hmm.
and you got to start attorney review.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is such a thing as good faith. So understand that if you, the buyer, make an offer and the seller accepts it, then you go into attorney review, and all of a sudden the seller is accepting another contract and asking you to make a better offer,
mm-hmm.
that's going to cause problems down the road
mm-hmm.
because you're going to the bad faith now comes up. You poison the waters, if you will. So let's say then you get back on track with the same two parties, but now the buyer's paying even more money. Well, when they go into inspections now,
this time to get it back.
Know, they're going to be holding very tight to
Absolutely.
This list. And they're going to say, no, this is what we want done. We
right.
paid more money. And now you're going to have more of an edge to the relationship and the transaction. And that can be a problem, a real challenge for the attorneys to keep them on track so that they don't go flying off over a dispute on, say, a $500 issue.
Yeah, exactly. No, that is great. I love your answer there. It's very cool. What about typical closing times? How long? What do you see as the typical closing for a transaction?
It depends on whether or not there's a mortgage involved.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a mortgage involved, we have no idea. It really depends on the lender. And some of the lenders are very efficient. For the most part right now, it takes much longer than people expect it to take to get through the appraisal process. That's one thing that's become more of an issue in the last 5-6 years,
mm-hmm.
is that more and more properties are not appraising. And so that puts a screech on the deal, or I should say that puts the brakes on a deal, because if you are the seller and all of a sudden the buyers come to you and say, well, we can't get a mortgage because the property didn't appraise, meaning that it didn't fall within that value ratio that they use,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then the lender will only give them a certain amount of money,
mm-hmm.
and that leaves a gap.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes the buyers will say to the seller, well, will you bring the price down?
Mm-hmm.
And the sellers, oftentimes they can't.
Right.
Because they have a mortgage of their own to pay off, or they mm-hmm. have other expenses. And so that's when the deal sometimes falls apart. Every now and then you'll have a buyer that can make up the difference because they love the house so much, they'll make up that whatever it is, $25,000, $30,000 difference,
mm-hmm.
and then the deal can go on. But oftentimes, if it doesn't appraise, the deal's going to fall through.
And there are different ratios for different types of loans, like the FHA and the VA loans, and those that are not exactly like the 20-80 or whatever.
Yeah. And for sellers, they need to understand also the difference between these mortgages, all right? If you have a VA mortgage, you have to understand that this is probably a first-time home buyer. The VA is going to be involved in the inspections as well. So you're going to have the private inspector representing the buyer. You're then going to have a VA inspector come by, and they're very particular. I mean, if you have, if you have something needs to be painted, they're going to expect you to paint that before the closing, even if it's in the middle of winter. I've seen that. Then you may have a township that will still have a CCO requirement with its own inspection. So you could potentially have three different inspections, and so that could be a real headache for sellers.
What do you see about when you're saying that properties aren't appraising as much? Why do you think that's the case?
The federal rules became much tighter, especially after the we had new regulations that went into effect after the Dodd Act. So the banks tightened up on that. They made it far more difficult for people to qualify for mortgages. And so that's why we're seeing, and I would say as many as 1 out of 4 mortgage-related closings are falling through because of appraisals.
Yeah.
So that's become a real issue out here.
So what about gifting? Like, can you share anything you know about, like, if a buyer's out there and they are short and they need to borrow it from family member or something? What's the deal
with
that?
Well, but you can't borrow it.
See?
It's going to have to be a gift.
A gift. Yeah, okay,
right.
Excuse me. So say that you
have... So a lender is not going to let you go and take a side loan,
mm-hmm.
all right, because
mm-hmm.
that could impact their priority on that property, and they don't want that.
Right.
So it has to be a gift.
So
right.
your family says, okay, we're going to give you $25,000.
Right.
How much can they give?
Oh, that's up to the lender. The lender will have limits on the amount of money that you can use.
That you can get as a gift?
I actually saw that recently.
What was it? Like what tell us the story.
Specific.
No, just like what happened?
I can't be specific because the transaction just happened and involved a family member of mine.
Oh, don't talk about it. We don't know anybody.
So it worked out. It was actually out of county. There was an appraisal issue. The buyers had the ability, though, to come up with the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I was shocked when I looked at a commitment later on that actually had limits on there as to how much money the buyers could put up, which made no sense to me.
Right. You'd think the more equity that they'd be
fine.
Not
the bank,
yeah,
so
exactly.
I don't get that. And I got the sense that it wasn't something the bank was terribly concerned about anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me. You were talking back about 30 years ago when I was also selling real estate when you were starting your practice, and we were there when all that was going on between the attorneys and the real estate agents.
Right.
And I also remember the mortgage changes back then versus now, like you say, so much tighter. But when I was young... And I remember buying my own first house. I remember being like within this range. It was like I needed like $5,000 or $10,000 or something. And then I remember, off the record, but there was like, I sold my boat. you had to have a reason that you had this money. But anyway, yeah, I had a beautiful boat. But anyway, all right, it's already 11:31, and I want you to remember who the guest is here. It's Kevin Kilcommons. He's an attorney here, and we're talking about real estate because real estate matters to me. I love New Jersey. Kevin loves Hunterdon County and New Jersey.
Absolutely.
Serving the areas in different specialties. Talk about your other specialties for a bit.
Sure. So it breaks down to three areas: the real estate, which includes commercial real estate. I love doing commercial deals. I also have a commercial practice, which has a niche feature, which is franchise law, which is becoming more of a larger percentage of my practice. And I started that probably about 15 years ago with local clients that were franchisees. So I learned it with them. And then I had another client come to me who wanted to start a franchise. So that client has now been successful. He's now in 15 states, closing on 100 units.
Wow. And
so that's been a lot of fun representing that company. Yeah.
So tell us about franchises. Like, we know a little bit, like McDonald's is a franchise,
sure,
an example, right?
Yes.
And our friend from Chick-fil-A in Flemington, they're awesome. Everybody goes there, and he's an awesome supporter of all the community. I don't know anybody but him too much, but okay, so that's a franchise.
Right.
So how do you get involved with these things? Like, meaning a person who has money, who's interested in getting into a great franchise.
Sure.
How does that work?
You have a lot of work to do because there are probably 15,000 franchises available to you in this country.
Wow.
And you have to be very careful about that investment. Every franchisor is a little bit different. There are great resources online that you can go to. I found one recently I would recommend called Franchise Chatter. I have nothing to do with this website, but this is a former franchisee, UPS franchisee, who also has an MBA. And he writes this great website where he talks to franchisees about what they should be looking for from a business perspective. And he even has a formula on there that you would use. You should always have an attorney review your franchise documents. So by federal law, and it's regulated by the Federal Trade Commission, when a franchisor offers you a franchise, they have to give you a franchise disclosure document. They must do that by law in every single state.
Interesting.
And they can be 300 pages long. They include what's essentially a prospectus of the business. They have to be completely transparent about their business, about the history of the business, who the people are behind the scenes that run the business, whether or not they've ever been arrested, whether or not they've ever been bankrupted, that sort of thing.
Wow.
It's very involved. And also in there are a lot of numbers. There are all sorts of tables where they have to give you information. There's an item in there that allows them to give you financial information. So people need to read those very carefully, but they also need a franchise attorney to go through it with them because there are things that we see that they won't see, even if they're sophisticated business people. And I've heard this over and over again. Well, they'll come to me and they'll say, well, I read through this. But if you feel you need to read through it and give me some advice, go ahead. And then after we sit down for 2 hours at our second conference, oftentimes they walk away thinking, I had no idea that was in there. I didn't see that. But when you've read enough of these and you've actually written them, and I've written, I don't know, scores of them for my client, there are things that you look for. There are trends in there that you want to look for.
Give us an example.
All right. So everybody's interested in how many franchises there are out there. How many franchise units do you own? That's an indicator of how successful they are.
Hmm.
Well, let's say, well, we have 100. Okay. And in the past 3 years, how many of them have been terminated? Well, there's a table on there that will tell you how many have been terminated. And they may have one termination. You would expect that. But every now and then, let's say you have one that has 300 franchises and only two or three terminations. Well, I'm a little skeptical. So I'm going to look at another table that's going to tell me how many transfers have there been. And oftentimes the franchisors will try and smooth over a termination by getting someone else to buy that site, and then they can call it a transfer rather than a termination. And if I see too many transfers, that raises a red flag for me because now I'm thinking, all right, there is something going on here. But does that mean it's outside of the norm? No, not necessarily. You would expect transfers, but you have to look at those numbers very carefully. And as an investor, you have to do your due diligence. You just can't walk in, accept everything the franchisor is telling you, because they will. They will sell
They're
you.
They're selling, yeah.
They will
I get
sell
it.
You. And one of the issues I have is that the clients will come to me after they've spent months talking to the franchisor, perhaps even visiting the franchisor's headquarters, meeting the entrepreneur that began the franchise. Now they've met the star.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he could be very, very gregarious and all. And then I have to try and walk them back a little bit to get them to see certain things because they've got rose-colored glasses. Even the sophisticated investors.
Oh, I believe it, yeah, because you know. They are being sold and they sure. do want to be in that club, I guess. And
if it's a brand that they know mm-hmm. and they get all excited about, we had one recently. I won't tell you what the brand is, but it's a very exciting brand. I've never seen so many franchisees in 1 year, you know, sign on
jumping
to a franchise
in the boat.
Before.
Yeah.
And my concern was when I looked at this, it was almost like a gold rush syndrome, and that's one of the things that you have to be careful about. That you're doing your due diligence. You're yeah. making sure they're making money, that their franchisees are making money, and you're actually calling these franchisees and asking them tough questions
and making sure they're legit.
Right, because their phone numbers are available
oh, yeah.
to you.
Of course, yeah. What types of different franchises have you like worked with? Can you know like what?
Food industry, health industry. So any one of the a lot of the major brands that you can think of, I've probably been involved in several of them. There's a new one coming to the state of. In fact, I can't even give names because I don't want.
No, it's okay. No, it's
and
just
the only reason is because
which like if yeah. you, I mean, like you say, the food industry because we understand like the Chick-fil-A's
right.
of the world. I don't know, mm-hmm. Subway's, are those all franchises?
Yes, they are.
And then on the health and other sides of it, I'm thinking of a corporation like Procter Gamble. They have their branded products. Those are not franchises,
right? Right. Those are not franchises.
Yeah.
So let me explain
okay.
what a franchise
yeah.
model is.
Let's
so,
hear.
Typically what happens is you have someone who had a very successful business and they have a system and they have a brand that's recognized, all right? And so then they have other people come to them and say, hey, we want a part of this. Well, one great way of doing that, of expanding your company, expanding your brand, is by giving someone a license to go out and start their own business using your brand, using your system, and perhaps even using your products if you provide them.
Cool.
And then you maintain control over them, all right? You maintain control over the quality. You train them. You make sure they're using the brand properly, that they're keeping up their standards. So in essence, what happens is this franchisee is using their money to start a unit using your brand and your products. That's the franchise
That's
model.
Very interesting.
And not only
and
that.
You know, it's funny. It's like I kind of just jump into like the idea of what I have is that a person like buys into a brand and as a franchise, but then you're actually really explaining it well. It's someone who had a great product,
right.
had a method, like you say, a system. They yeah. had something that could be remodeled, redone in another place, and then you're giving a license to those, and then they're paying you to be able to access that, but they also are spending their own money.
Right.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking, Madalena's Cheesecake. Madalena, Janet, come on. You got this. You got this. They should be doing that.
I don't know. I'll be happy to talk to them.
Yeah.
But not only are they paying the money out to build this business, but then they're paying you a royalty every month on their gross sales.
I got to think of something good.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. It's a great concept.
No, it is. It really is. So now it's making a lot more sense. Thank you for the clarification.
Sure.
That must be pretty fun, too.
It is.
And
it's
then,
a lot of fun.
And now that you say that, I can really, really, really understand how the sales is going on. You know, if I created something I really love right. and I did a great job, I will do anything, say anything to get you to do it. Because if you do it, then I'm going to get money from you and me. And then we can start.
But that's where the FTC comes in.
Oh, okay.
Because
so.
For many, many years, people were selling franchises before they were regulated.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
And then people were getting ripped off.
Yeah.
So they had
I
to,
can see that.
Had to protect the investors. So you have to be very careful as a franchisor what you say.
Is that disclosure thing you were talking
yes,
about?
Yes, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. But not only that, but if you have somebody who's out there brokering for you or selling for you who's your direct employee, they have to be very careful about what they say to the potential franchisee. So,
don't
for instance,
promise
you
and
can't over. Well, you have to be very careful. You can't give them projected sales, for instance.
Wow,
they have
that's
going to
be hard for the investor to be able to understand if they can't get the.
Well, within the FDD, the franchise disclosure document, there's going to be some financial information.
Okay.
But they have to, the franchisor has to stay within the boundaries of what they've provided to everybody. They can't expound on it. They can give you financial statements and show you financial statements for the last 3 years, which most of them, in fact, are required to do by law. So you have to have the ability to break down those financial statements and view them and compare them to see, is the company growing? Has it flatlined? Is it dropping off? Are they making more money, let's say, from the franchise initial fees as opposed to royalties? Those are the things that, I look for that
Wow.
you have to be very careful about.
Well, what about, like, if you have this great idea and then you can think of it as the franchise and you have these people in different geographies Right. that are looking at the success of the original one, but everything is applicable to their own
Sure.
market.
Right.
So how is it that someone like you takes and reviews and says, well, this is what happened over here, but you only have that? Or is it the investor
right.
that understands that before they even
get
involved?
There's only so much advice I can give. I give legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
So where I draw the line is trying to figure out whether a market is going to work for my client. I don't have the ability to, mm-hmm. to give that advice.
Mm-hmm.
That's up to them, and to work together with the franchisor to figure out what market within their territory is going to make the most sense. So take food industry, for instance. Location is super important, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes what will happen is the franchisee and the franchisor will work together. The franchisor will often have demographics available to the franchisee. They'll have an area regional manager, if you will, that can work with the franchisee to come up with the actual location where they're going to put their brick-and-mortar store.
Wow.
So that's often a collaborative effort between the two. But ultimately, the papers are going to say that it's on the franchisee.
Mm-hmm.
We'll help you,
mm-hmm.
but ultimately it's your responsibility. And if you fail at that site, we're not accepting any responsibility for that. That's on you.
Well, okay. This is so interesting. Aren't you lucky? I feel really lucky because I get to find out all this behind the scenes, very important information, and learn so much. And today I'm learning a lot about franchises, and I hope you are too. All right. So one
By
question.
By the way, Weikert, is that a franchise?
I don't know. Is it?
Many of the real estate companies are. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's something to know. I would think in a way, like being a realtor, I bought into a franchise in a way. I mean, I don't know, but I love it.
You pay your expenses, right?
I love Weikert, yes, Flemington. I love being in the office. My boss is awesome. It's the territory. I love that location. Like you say, right. Location, location, location. I love New Jersey.
Yep.
So before we go to our break, all right, just because I have to ask, what about, like, do you have a story of, because to me, like, to own a franchise would be like the dream come true, right? To be able to have the money to buy into this franchise. But
sure.
Can you tell us about when something goes bad?
Yeah, absolutely. There are, whenever you look at the franchise disclosure documents where they give you the financial information, then they'll often give you their experience with, let's say, a pool of owners,
mm-hmm.
of franchisees. And you're always going to see the top third, then you're going to see the average third, and then you're going to see the bottom third, the folks that are just barely making it and
mm-hmm.
all. So in every single franchise organization, you're going to have winners and you're going to have losers. And losers doesn't necessarily mean that you're actually losing money. It may just be
it's
that you're not
like
making
20%
the money
of the people
you were
doing
make.
It's like
right.
the cream of the crop on
right.
top.
So you're going to have better market, stronger markets than other markets. Okay. So what happens when things go really bad and you're not making your royalty payments or you're not making your lease payments for your brick and mortar store? Now the landlord is reaching out to the franchisor saying, hey, your guy's not paying. What are we going to do here?
Thanks.
That's a bad situation. So what the franchisors have to do is sometimes they have a remediation method where they'll put you on notice. They'll send you back for refresher training, let's say. Let's say they send people in and they audit you and they realize, you know what, the staff is not trained the way they should be.
Oh.
So sometimes they'll bring you back for refresher training
mm-hmm.
to try and get you back on track because it doesn't look good for them if one of their stores closed down. Everybody's going to notice that. Goes, hey,
right.
What's going on with
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah.
Right? So it doesn't look good for the brand if a store closes. So it's in the franchisor's best interest to try and boost the franchisee. And oftentimes that's what they'll try to do. Other times they don't have that ability or let's say they don't have that culture. It's like you don't make it, you're out.
Yeah.
And it can be brutal. And they have the ability to cancel your franchise, to make you take down all the signs. And if you try to keep your business going and you're not taking all the what we call the dress, and that's all the interior, the colors and the logos.
Oh my goodness.
That's what's known as dress.
Wow.
If you don't take all that down, they're going to come in and shut you down. They're going to get an injunction to shut you down if they need to.
Well, because it does affect all the other franchises.
Exactly,
the franchise holders.
Sure.
What do you call them?
Well, they're just franchisees.
Franchisees.
Yep. Yep.
All right. I'm learning a lot. And I always have such a good time because, you know, it's hard to find out things you don't know. Like, say I was thinking about it or you were thinking about opening a franchise. But guess what? We wouldn't know who to call. Now we have him right here in the studio here at the Hunterdon Chamber. And Kevin Kilcommons is a very, very active member of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. And you guys know I love the chamber. So we're going to go to our last break. Stay with us. And thanks for watching in.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Okay, we're back. I'm Jeannie Murphy. I'm with Weikert Flemington. This is I Love New Jersey Radio from the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I think it's fun. If you're looking to buy or sell a house, please feel free to call me in Flemington, anywhere across the state of New Jersey. I love New Jersey. And Kevin Kilcommons is my colleague here from the Hunterdon Chamber and also an attorney talking about his real estate specialty. He also was getting into the franchise specialty, which is absolutely fascinating. And then you were going to go ahead and tell us a little more.
Well, we had talked during the break about one of the jobs I often get when I'm doing franchise work is reviewing leases.
Mm-hmm.
And we had talked a little bit about leases and malls and whatnot, because that's a typical natural outflow from when you get your franchise and you're up and running and you have a brick-and-mortar store, chances are you're going to need a lease. So that's often something that I offer my clients as well. And leases are very complicated. Commercial leases are probably some of the most archaic legal documents you will ever review.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Archaic
because some of these malls and strip malls have been in existence now for 15, 60 years.
Yeah.
All right? And they're using the same lease they were 50 years ago. And actually, there's something called a ground lease, too. So you may have a mall where there is a ground lease, which is held by the actual owners of the property. And then they have another lease that they give to a developer who's going to come in to be the next level of lessor, okay? And then they're the ones that are actually the landlords for all those store owners.
Oh, wow. This is so interesting. Okay,
right.
So you're talking about, like, tomorrow I'm going to Austin to visit our son with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I always laugh because as soon as we land in any city, we see Marshall's, TJ Maxx, what are the other ones? Kohl's.
Anchor stores.
They're all there. Okay.
Anchor stores, yes.
He knows the name.
Yeah.
Okay, anchor stores. And so, okay, you're saying that someone owned the property and then they leased it out to a developer?
Right.
And then the developer knows, what did you call them, anchor properties? Is that what happens?
Well, the developer will actually build the mall, mm-hmm. all right?
Because they will look
and
the same.
And they will lease them all the space out in the mall. Mm-hmm. And so the developer then every month pays the owner money, rent, and then all the shop owners pay the developer rent. Okay,
so wow.
You may have a couple different layers of lessors involved here. Hmm. Okay, and then so how do you go about that? I mean, the most successful model that we see these days is that you're going to have a couple of anchor stores that everybody knows,
yeah.
and everybody wants.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Michael's,
Kohl's, Michael's.
Right, everyone loves Michael's, Kohl's,
Marshall's.
And what do you know? A mile from here, we have a strip mall with a Kohl's,
yeah,
and with a Michael's. And then they have, what's the restaurant on the far end? It's the
Chili's.
Chili's.
I love their margaritas.
Okay, I think we can call Chili's an anchor store.
Okay.
And then you have Burlington Coat.
Right.
Right. And then in between there, you have all these other small shops.
The jewelers.
Some of which are franchises.
Yeah.
So
Panera.
Hallmark.
Yeah.
Panera.
Uh-huh.
Cold Stone Creamery.
Yeah.
They're all in there.
He knows
and
them all.
They all take like a 20-foot width, okay?
Yeah.
So those are the smaller shops, and as when you are going in there as a small shop owner, you have to be very conscious in the lease about what restrictions there may be that have been placed there by the anchor stores.
Like, you can't compete with me?
Right.
I love it. I wish I was one of those. I wish
so
I was like
certain,
that sales
so
rep.
Well, I, you know, and there's one I was looking at recently that had a shopping store in there, a large shopping store. And they had probably 50 different restrictions on other businesses that could go into the same strip mall.
Wow.
So you have to be very careful when you review these leases that you're aware
and
of
you
what those...
And you do this?
Yes.
Wow.
You have to be very careful what those restrictions are to make sure that those restrictions are not going to impact your business. Now,
right.
Getting back to franchising again.
Yeah.
The franchisors know this.
Okay.
And oftentimes they'll provide you with the support. In fact, they may even go in there and negotiate these leases for you, some of them.
Wow.
Right? But they're all going to have requirements. They're all going to make sure that you're able to put up all their signs and that you're able to have all your dress in there as well because you have to comply with the franchise agreement. But the landlord has to get on board as well, and the franchisor may have requirements that they want the landlord to accept that have to be included in that lease. So now you've got not two parties – the tenant
wow.
and the landlord, but now you have the tenant, the landlord, and the franchisor.
So what about how cool it would be if you were an investor and you knew that your franchise was an anchor, like Chili's
sure.
or a Chick-fil-A.
Sure, yes.
So like, okay, say across the country,
yeah.
Chick-fil-A is always going to be allowed on the same property. Because I'm looking at it like Outback Steakhouse, or I don't know what they are, but you see the same companies all the time. Like you call them
sure.
anchor. Now I feel like I know everything because I know that word.
Right.
But so then if you're helping an investor to invest in a franchise and you find out that they do have this extra special privilege of
panache. They have, right. They have more leverage.
They're synergistic to
absolutely.
The rest of the anchors. Wow, what an opportunity.
Right. So that may give you a lot of leverage with the lessor when it comes to negotiating those terms because they want you. So you have more negotiating power
than you would
if you were a small shop. Hmm. They're handed a lease. They're told, here it is. We really don't want to talk to you about negotiating this. You don't have as much leverage. But if you come from a strong brand that the owners of that mall know are going to draw people,
right.
they're going to want you, and they're going to bend over backwards to give you terms that you find acceptable. It gives you more leverage, as opposed to just having ABC store that nobody knows. Nobody knows the brand. It's just a mom-and-pop store. You're not going to have the same leverage. And you may not have the same support from a franchisor to help you find that location and then help advise you on what terms are acceptable or making sure that your needs are being met by that landlord.
I feel like I just went through 4 years of college. I'm so excited. Now you have 2 minutes left. Tell us.
Sure.
I want you to talk about that hope thing you were talking about.
Oh, hope springs eternal?
Yes. Okay, say it slow. What is it?
Hope
so cute.
Springs eternal.
Hope springs eternal.
Right. So, and the issue came up because you were wondering why people would open up a restaurant in the same location over and over and over again. And we both know places like that in Huntington County.
Yes.
Well, it goes back to the entrepreneurial spirit, mm-hmm. okay?
I have it.
Okay. So people, you know, that's one of the reasons why I love doing franchise work because I love working with entrepreneurs. And these are people who are very hopeful. They're people who are very optimistic. They're people who believe that I can get this done. It's kind of a can-do spirit. And so people will look at a location, and they'll see it completely different from someone else. And they'll think, you know what, I can make this work because I'm going to do it slightly differently, or I'm going to have a different sign, or I'm going to offer different food. And oftentimes they're right. That's why we see regeneration in our cities.
I'm so glad that you're telling me this, because I always feel sorry for people when I'm driving down the street and I see that someone went back into another restaurant in that place that went out. But no, you made
but
me.
Sometimes
it's
they
hope.
Work. Sometimes it works. And so that's why downtown areas, and I don't want to, you know, step on a live wire here, but here in Flemington, there's a lot of dispute and arguing going on about how to reconstitute Flemington. And so, and you have, and that's, it's healthy to have that argument, mm-hmm. but I think that it's important to bring people in who have that vision, who have that can-do spirit,
right.
and who have the hope and optimism to get things done and create something new
Yay.
That people want that will draw people to that area.
Wow, what a perfect way to end the show today. Thank you for those words of wisdom and for everything you taught us today. Kevin Kilcommons, he's our attorney go-to guy here at Hunter & Chamber. If you have real estate or you're trying to buy a franchise or you're thinking about it being the next owner of the franchise like sure. Janet Madalena should, I know you agree. They had to do that. I can't help it. Then get in touch with them. And if you're looking for real estate and I love New Jersey, then get in touch with me, Jeannie Murphy Weichert. Thank you again,
okay,
Kevin.
Thank you, Jeannie.
It's so much fun. You're going to have to come back and talk more about this stuff because I'm totally fascinated by that. I hope you are too. Have a great day.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
$1 million for cancer research. This is USA Headline News.
Would you wait several days for your cell phone to fully charge? Would you wait several days to feel the full effect of relief from your nasal congestion? Flonase Allergy Relief Nasal Spray could take that long. But if you're congested now and you want powerful relief now, use Afrin No Drip. Afrin starts working in seconds and keeps working for 12 hours. So why wait several days to feel the full effect?
When
you can start to get relief in seconds with Afrin. Afrin, powerful congestion relief without the wait. Use as directed.
A 2-year-old boy is lucky he wasn't seriously hurt or worse after he fell into a cheetah pen at the Cleveland Zoo Saturday. Zoo spokesman Dr. Christopher Kuhar says the child's mother was holding him over an observation wall when she dropped him.
While this incident is disturbing to everyone, we are glad the injuries were not any more severe. Unfortunately, we have a number of eyewitnesses accounts that point to the strong likelihood that the child was dangled over the railing.
Fortunately, the two cats never approached the boy and he was rescued from the enclosure. The boy was taken to the hospital to be treated for a leg injury from the fall. Cleveland Metro Parks say they plan to press for misdemeanor child endangerment charges against the parents.
Safety is a top priority here, and we wish the child the best.
A Lake Zurich, Illinois sixth grader who finished tied for the first place in ESPN's Bracket Challenge is being awarded after all. The founders of the weight loss company Visalus decided to step in and provide Sam Holt with their own prize. Sam's mother, Liz, expressed her thanks on a video posted to the company's YouTube page.
Ryan, Nick, and Blake are generously offering Sam a $20,000 college scholarship.
The 12-year-old beat out more than 11 million other participants to finish tied for first in the bracket challenge, but was ineligible to receive ESPN's grand prize because he is not 18. One of the prizes was a $20,000 gift card to Best Buy. You can find more special interest stories, news, and, of course, headlines online anytime at usaheadlinenews.com. I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
It's 9:07, time for Hunter Chamber Radio weather. We're at 48 degrees and partly cloudy skies in Flemington. Today is Monday, April 13, 2015. There will be sun and clouds mixed today, a high of 73. Doesn't that sound great? Wind south at 10 to 15 miles an hour. It'll be partly cloudy skies this evening, increasing clouds with periods of showers late. A low of 53, wind south-southwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance of rain is 70%. Cloudy and periods of rain early tomorrow, a high of 66, winds light and variable.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump continuing a theme concerning health care when he addressed the Republican Congressional Committee dinner on Tuesday night.
Essentially, what I'm saying is we're going to come up with a health care plan. We're not going to vote on it until after the election. We'll all promise it's going to be our first vote because we blew it the last time. Man.
Trump saying the Republican.